Welcome to the book show, heard coast to coast. I'm Alex Papajohn.
And I'm Jack Singer.
This is Cutting Edge Talk about cutting edge books. And this morning, we're going to be talking to Todd Gold, author of Officially Osborne, the official book. That's right, Oz. This is the official book about the Osborne family. As
what makes it official? Is it that the family sanctions it, or?
You know what? We're going to have to ask him during the interview.
Yes.
You're going to have to remind me to ask him that question.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but we'll have to ask him. But this is about the Osborne family as seen on MTV. And we are broadcasting, by the way, from our brand new custom-made studio high atop the Westwood building overlooking
the parking deck.
The parking deck, that's right.
Now, I have to say, though, the Ozzy group. Ozzy Osborne's family is the biggest group of fruitcakes you've ever seen.
You know,
I'll be polite when I talk to this guy, but they are fruitcakes.
I've looked at you look at the cover of the book, and for a moment I did a double take because I thought it was a picture of the Addams family. But it wasn't. It's the Osbournes.
It is the Osbournes, yes.
They're more than eccentric. They're more than enigmas. They look weird.
You have to watch the show, Alex. I know you don't tend to watch it, but.
But you know what? The guy was such a freakishly wild guy as a young fella, and he broke into rock, and now he's worth millions.
Many millions.
Many millions of dollars.
And who knows how much he gets for this radio show, or not radio, the television show he's doing.
That's right. I'll bet you it's
many millions of dollars.
Yeah. So, somebody paid me millions to put cameras in my, you know, family room and bedroom and kitchen. Fine.
Oh, yeah.
I'd do it. So that's Todd Gold, author of Officially Osborne. We're going to be talking to him. Also on the book show, we're going to be talking to MJ Rose. She's an author and journalist and e-publishing guru out of New York City. If you're interested in any of her books, go to www.mjrose.com. We're also going to be announcing America's top 10 best-selling books this past week. Based on the USA Today top 10. So we're going to announce that later. And we're also going to have Contest Corner later in the show.
Absolutely.
Sponsored by Writer's Digest Magazine, America's number one magazine for writers. And we're also sponsored, by the way, by Pages Magazine, the magazine for people
who
love books.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Do you like to write? If so, Writer's Digest, the world's leading magazine for writers, is for you. Since 1920, Writer's Digest has provided expert writing instruction, inspiration, and up-to-date marketing information. Each month, readers turn to Writer's Digest to discover technique columns geared toward specific genres, including screenwriting, fiction, nonfiction, children's books, and more. Publishing information, including how to write solid cover and query letters that catch the interest of agents and editors. Tips and tricks for overcoming writer's block. Career opportunities. Interviews with best-selling authors. Tools of the trade, including the latest information on writing software and hardware, legal advice for writers, and more. Log on to www.writersdigest.com/thebookshow and ask for your two free issues. You'll see why more than 200,000 writers rely on Writer's Digest every month to learn the secrets of getting their words polished, published, and paid for.
Do you want thousands of books at your fingertips? If so, go to enovel.com. At enovel.com, you'll find thousands of e-books, print books, and audiobooks to browse and buy. Enovel.com, the world's biggest e-book site, sells books from big-name authors and hot new rising stars. And if you're a promising writer, Enovel might publish your book, too. So go to www.enovel.com to shop for great e-books, print books, and audiobooks, or to publish your own book today.
The world of publishing is changing. More and more authors are self-publishing their work, and why shouldn't they? Self-publishing offers greater creative control and potential for greater financial reward than more traditional methods. That's why we started Self-Publishers Digest, a how-to guide for authors that want to publish their own work successfully. Each month, we feature articles about writing, marketing, and promoting your self-published piece. All of the articles are written by authors who have self-published successfully. If you're interested in learning more about the world of self-publishing or submitting a story, please contact us at info@titanbeach.com. Or, if you're interested in display or classified advertising opportunities with Self-Publishers Digest, please contact Chris Ferguson at cferguson@titanbeach.com. Self-Publishers Digest, the path to self-publishing.
All right, we're ready for our What's News in Publishing segment. Normally we do this with MJ Rose. We've been trying to get through to her, but we can't seem to make a connection.
Due to technical difficulties.
Maybe the snowstorm in Virginia somehow reached a patch up in New York City.
Wait a second. This snowstorm went sideways. It didn't go up, so she should be there.
Yeah, we're not sure where she is, but we are still going to do the news this past week in the publishing industry because MJ did send us the news items.
Pre-release copies.
That's right. The pre-release copy of the new Harry Potter book. Is that what you're talking about, the pre-release copies?
Well, no, there's no pre-release copies out yet, but
right.
there is great news. I mean, the latest version has finally got a release date.
Right. The latest, and this is the fifth book in the Harry Potter series, and the author has said that there's going to be 7 books in the series, right? In the Harry Potter series.
I think you are correct, yes.
Isn't that right?
Yes.
So we have...
This is by far the largest one. Supposedly this one passes the weight test. I think it's like 2,000 pages or something like that.
Right. This is...
This is a kid's book.
Well, it's not 2,000 pages. 255,000 words.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay.
255,000 words. This is the fifth book.
War and Peace of kids' books.
Yeah, this is a long book. It's longer than the previous Harry Potter book, which was a little bit shorter than this one. Yeah, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire was the previous one. This one is called Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, and it's to be published on June 21st. I believe that's a Saturday.
Right, this is when Dumbledore sits Harry Potter down and tells him the whole truth.
I guess so. So this is J.K. Rowling, of course, is the author and
rich author.
Yes, yeah, second richest woman in England.
And this one might put her over the top.
That's right. May put her over the top. We'll see. Okay, so look forward to that, folks. And of course, the book show is going to try to get a pre-release copy.
Yes.
As soon as possible, so we can give you a little bit of scoop right here on the book show. Second news item, which is of interest to a lot of people, and this involves the copyright law that Congress passed a couple of years ago. What they did is they extended the copyright coverage to works like movies and books and songs. And the current law is that the copyright holder, that's the creator of the work, let's say the creator of a book like J.K. Rowling, owns the rights, or her estate owns the rights in her work all the way through 70 years after the death of the creator.
So, that is hard to believe.
So if J.K. Rowling lives for another 40 years or so, when she dies 40 years from now, her estate still has exclusive copyright on it for 70 years after that.
See, I don't understand.
It's 110 years.
But think about this rationale. Do a comparison. You have a patent on a gizmo that really changes the face of humanity, whatever, or even just on anything, on sliding windows for all that matters. That's only good for what, 17 years? And then anybody can copy it and
20
do whatever they want.
Yeah, 20 years.
20 years, okay. Yeah, 20 Same years. With a medical product.
Right.
And then it becomes public domain. Why is a written document that much more valuable that it gets 70 years?
No, actually, I think it's because it's less valuable. I think the reason why there's patents on processes and chemical compounds and drugs is because they are so important to enhancing and improving the quality of life in our country.
You know, right.
They can have health. But a movie, entertainment, books, that's not crucial, nearly as crucial to your quality of life. It doesn't involve your health.
But why does it get that much more protection? It's not logical.
Because it's created purely for your enjoyment. And I guess, they want to protect the creativity of the individual, and they want to help you monetize it somehow. And
I could see
– it's an incentive, in other words. If you put in – some of these authors, sometimes they put in years writing books.
Oh, their whole life maybe.
Yeah, their whole life. So they won't have an incentive unless they know that they can protect it for a long time in the future.
I understand incentive. What you're saying, but why is it get an extended period beyond – that much beyond a patent or other things that just –
Well, again, the patents are for processes or novel new processes or compounds that can affect your quality of life. I mean, it can affect your health. I mean, imagine if penicillin had protection 70 years after the death of, you know, the creator. Or if it's a corporation that owns the copyright. This is why this case is so important. For companies like Disney that create Lion King, the Congress extended the copyright, and it's 95 years. They have an exclusive copyright on Lion King for 95 years. And so what happened is the case went to the Supreme Court. A case went to the Supreme Court testing this new law that was passed, okay? And the Supreme Court ruled 7-2 in favor of this. It upheld the lengthier copyrights protecting profits from songs and books and cartoon characters.
And isn't this arbitrary by Congress? Congress is making this law?
Well, it's – I don't know if it's arbitrary. I mean, arbitrary means you really don't have a sound basis for doing it. But Congress
well,
has the power.
Why not 150 years? I mean, who cares? They're going to be dead anyway.
Right. Well, you know, it's – again, Congress represents the people. And if Congress voted for it, you have to believe that either the American people don't care or
– I could see if they're still actively using the product, the Lion King as your example. But my gosh, if Lion King's sitting on the shelf for 65 years and it hasn't been touched by Disney, no one else can use anything about it?
Well, they may revive it. Remember, a lot of these old Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, until new technologies came along, like VCRs, and then you had, you know, CDs and DVDs and the internet. See, they're new technology, and they can exploit their intellectual property all over again.
And if they're actively doing it, I don't have an issue with that. I'm just saying, if a product's sitting on the shelf,
it may. But that's the thing, though; those products may have gone dormant for 10 years before those new technologies came along.
There's a difference between 10 years. And 70 years, though.
Right.
Anyway.
All
what's
right.
the next news
And then
item?
The next news item, MJ sent this to us about the National Book Critics Circle Award nominees. And the nominees included some of the year's most popular titles. And I've heard of both of these, Middlesex by Jeffrey Eugenides. I think he's Greek. And Atonement by Ian McEwan, who's definitely not Greek.
Yeah.
What is that, Irish?
I would guess so.
And it says, unlike the situation previous years, there's no overlap between the National Book Critics Circle Awards and the National Book Awards in Fiction. And I guess the point is that
– what do you mean overlap?
Well, they're not the same. The National Book Critics Circle Awards, given out, you know, for the best fiction and the best general nonfiction,
right,
had no overlap with the other award given out, which is the National Book Award.
Okay.
And I guess what that says is it's probably – I guess it's kind of interesting because you have the critics who are picking certain books and then the National Book Awards, which are picked by a different set of people. And it just goes to show you, I think, how subjective all this is.
Very subjective.
You know?
And they have hundreds upon hundreds, if not thousands, of books to choose from.
Yeah.
Who can read them all? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Look at Alex. We have to do an author a week on this show.
Yeah.
It's hard enough to read each of these books, no less read anything for enjoyment.
That's right. That's right. I mean, that's 52 books a year. 52 books a year. So anyway, it's just really interesting to see, for example, the fiction winners for the National Book Critics Circle Award, Middlesex by Jeffrey Eugenides.
Say that three times fast. But anyway.
Yeah, they just didn't overlap. So that's kind of interesting, I guess. Two awards and two completely different sets of winners. And then we have something really interesting here. You're familiar with the New York Times bestseller list, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
you used to use that before you switched over to the USA, didn't you?
Right. In many quarters, the New York Times bestseller list is the Holy Grail. I mean,
that's
the bestseller list if you had to boil it down to one list. Well, there are a number of people now around the country who are expressing skepticism and doubt as to whether they ought to even publish a New York Times bestseller list and whether it deserves its place in the pantheon of, you know, best-selling lists. And the reason is this. Greg Berrios, who's an editor for the San Antonio Express News, published a column about whether his newspaper, the San Antonio Express News, should continue running New York Times bestseller list or run another book review in its place. And here's why. Number one, he says, more than 50% of the books on the New York Times bestseller list never get reviewed. While and the San Antonio Press, they review about 50% of the books too. So not all of them get reviewed on the New York Times. In addition, he cites the confusion created when the paper runs both a daily review and a Sunday book review and wonders which has the authority. I'm not sure I understand that. Berrios also objects to the list running 2 weeks after it is compiled, so the New York Times bestseller list can be dated.
Absolutely.
And the New York Times bestseller list does not consider internet sales in its tabulations. I think internet sales now are from 5 to 10% of total
sales. Exactly. That can make a big difference.
It can make a big difference with, you know, with select titles. So he just says, based on all that, New York Times bestseller list, maybe it doesn't deserve the place that it has right now, and maybe they shouldn't publish it.
It sounds like they need a slap upside their head to get with the current times.
It looks like they do. So that's the news in publishing this week.
Excellent.
On the Book Show, and we'll look forward to having MJ Rose next week.
Hey, Billy, what you doing on the computer?
I'm playing Caveman. It's really cool.
It may be cool, but it's just a game. Come with me.
Where are we going?
You'll see.
Wow, Luray Caverns! A real cave!
Now you can really play Caveman.
Hey, fried eggs! Did cavemen eat fried eggs?
Probably not.
And look, a pool!
You know, nothing beats a day at Luray Caverns. Formed over 400 million years ago, it's filled with wondrous things. There's even a real pipe organ here we call our Stalact pipe organ that actually uses real stalactites to form the tones. And then there's the, well, you'll just have to come see it for yourself.
See? You learned something.
I sure did. What'd I learn?
You learned that computers are great, but nothing beats the real thing.
Right. So come on, everybody.
Be a caveman!
Do you like to write? If so, Writer's Digest, the world's leading magazine for writers, is for you. Since 1920, Writer's Digest has provided expert writing instruction, inspiration, and up-to-date marketing information. Each month, readers turn to Writer's Digest to discover technique columns geared toward specific genres, including screenwriting, fiction, nonfiction, children's books, and more. Publishing information, including how to write solid cover and query letters that catch the interest of agents and editors. Tips and tricks for overcoming writer's block. Career opportunities. Interviews with best-selling authors. Tools of the trade, including the latest information on writing software and hardware, legal advice for writers, and more. Log on to www.writersdigest.com/thebookshow and ask for your two free issues. You'll see why more than 200,000 writers rely on Writer's Digest every month to learn the secrets of getting their words polished, published, and paid for.
Do you want thousands of books at your fingertips? If so, go to enovel.com. At enovel.com, you'll find thousands of e-books, print books, and audiobooks to browse and buy. Enovel.com, the world's biggest e-book site, sells books from big-name authors and hot new rising stars. And if you're a promising writer, Enovel might publish your book, too. So go to www.enovel.com to shop for great e-books, print books, and audiobooks, or to publish your own book today.
The world of publishing is changing. More and more authors are self-publishing their work, and why shouldn't they? Self-publishing offers greater creative control and potential for greater financial reward than more traditional methods. That's why we started Self Publishers Digest, a how-to guide for authors that want to publish their own work successfully. Each month, we feature articles about writing, marketing, and promoting your self-published piece. All of the articles are written by authors who have self-published successfully. If you're interested in learning more about the world of self-publishing or submitting a story, please contact us at info@titanbeach.com. Or, if you're interested in display or classified advertising opportunities with Self-Publishers Digest, please contact Chris Ferguson at cferguson@titanbeach.com. Self-Publishers Digest, the path to self-publishing.
All right, Todd, are you with us?
I am.
Great.
Welcome to the book show.
Yeah, welcome to the book show, Todd.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being with us. I read your book, actually, over the last couple of days, and really, really interesting. I mean, this whole book really came about as a result of a television show.
Well, a television show that turned into a phenomenon. It's kind of a accidental series. MTV and the Osbournes were really started out as an experiment. They had all signed up for a couple weeks of taping, and with the goal of seeing what they were going to get. And the producers liked the tape so much, they just kept going. The Osbournes, you know, didn't get to see any of the tape, obviously. And, you know, and it turned into a series. A series, you know, that kind of exploded.
A very strange series.
Let me ask you a question now. Let's back up for a second. This book is called Officially Osbourne, and it's, the name comes from Ozzy Osbourne.
Ozzy.
Right? And who's Ozzy Osbourne, for those people who don't know?
Well, Ozzy Osbourne is kind of the godfather of heavy metal rock. You know, he is a guy from Birmingham, England, heavily influenced by the Beatles, who became a lead singer for seminal dark heavy metal group called Black Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
He broke away from Black Sabbath and had an even bigger solo career, full of some good music and a lot of offstage mayhem and myth.
And on stage, man.
Centered around drugs and violence and dark symbolism and all of that stuff.
And when was this going on, 70s and 80s?
You know, he and Sabbath started out in the 70s. Ozzy's solo career began in 1980, and he was kind of reborn in the mid-90s by the Ozfest tour. The Ozfest tour is a very successful summer hard rock tour that puts Ozzy at the kind of center of a lot of up-and-coming hard rock bands.
Okay. So this guy was a really successful rock star, kind of the legendary lifestyle. He partied. He had women. I mean, he had just about everything you want, right?
He had, yeah. Ozzy was a world-famous rock star, surrounded by all the stories that go with being an out-of-control rock star. At the same time, he was a husband, he was a father, and, you know, and a struggling alcoholic drug addict. All those good things.
I know in my younger days, this is Jack, by the way, I didn't really hear much about, I knew Black Sabbath and followed music and didn't follow Ozzy much until he bit the head off the bat.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the legend really started when Ozzy went solo in 1980. He'd been fired by Black Sabbath. He was down and out. He was, you know, nobody wanted to sign him, and they went in for, he and Sharon, his new manager, went in for a meeting at CBS or Sony Records.
How did he get fired by Black Sabbath?
Amazingly, he was too much for them to deal with. He was depressed. He was on drugs. He was out of control. There was lots of ego clashing, and they just didn't want to put up with him.
Yeah.
It was, you know, think Black Sabbath, or think Spinal Tap, you know, but real life and, you know, with a little bit more edge.
Right.
And so Ozzy was starting over.
Okay.
And in his career, he went to a meeting at CBS, and he had drank several bottles of cognac and vodka, and, you know, he was a human torch. And in his pockets, he had a couple white doves. And in the course of this meeting, he bit the head off two doves. Blood splattered everywhere. He spit the head out across the table. They kicked him out of the building. In fact, they banned him. Banned him forever, but they signed him.
They signed him, see?
But they still signed him. And the album sold, you know, his debut solo album sold like 7 million copies. So they kept putting out records. A few years later, Ozzy bit the head off a bat, you know, and this was now in the mid-80s.
Now, rumor has it he thought it was a rubber or plastic bat, and it actually was a real one.
Exactly. At the time, Ozzy's fans got into the habit of bringing raw meat and the entrails of animals to his concerts, and they'd throw them on stage, you know, and it was a really disgusting kind of scene. And Ozzy used to have some plastic bats and you know, animals on stage, and he'd whip those around. Anyway, somebody threw a real bat up on the stage. He thought it was one of his own plastic ones. He picked it up and bit the head off. And he was out of his mind, of course, but also disgusted, rightfully disgusted, and worse. I mean, he paid a heavy price. He was rushed to the hospital immediately after the show and received a whole series of rabies shots that he calls, you know, the most painful experience of his life.
Wow.
Well, that'll teach you. Don't bite the head off a bat.
Exactly. So, you know, so he's got, so by the mid-80s, he'd bit the heads off doves. He'd bit the heads off bats. He'd been arrested for relieving himself outside the Alamo. He was banned from ever playing in San Antonio.
Yeah, I could picture that, yes.
And then a little later, by the end of the decade, he was sued by a family whose son committed suicide, they claimed, while listening and being influenced by one of Ozzy's songs. Okay. Their case was thrown out and nothing happened. But all of this contributed to the lore, of the guy who's now America's favorite dad.
Right. So and then in the 90s, I guess his rock career starts tapering off. Is that right? I mean, he mellows out a little bit?
You know, it was up and down. He still had a few hits. He was still selling albums. At the same time, if you remember, Pat Boone cut an album of heavy metal songs and included one of Ozzy's. They duetted, and that gave him a little bit of a publicity bump. But really, he was laying low until the mid to later 90s when they started Ozfest, which turned into this very successful summer tour.
What's an Ozfest?
Ozfest is a big summer hard rock tour that Ozzy headlines and then showcases younger up and coming bands. It's kind of, you know, if you know Lilith Fair or any of the other summer tours that gather certain musicians together, this is the big bad dark cloud that, gotcha, you know, cuts across the country.
Gotcha. Okay. So now he met Sharon, his current wife. That's his second wife, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and when did he meet her? When did he meet Sharon?
Well, he first met Sharon in 1970.
Oh.
She was working for her father, who was a very prominent manager of musical acts in London, including Black Sabbath. She says, Sabbath, you know, were these really kids just above the poverty line who walked into the office and scared the bejesus out of her, especially Ozzy, who came in wearing pajamas. He had a big, heavy chain necklace, and then the pendant on his chain was a huge water faucet. And he was dirty, and he sat down in the office, and she just didn't know how to deal with him. But so she started doing little errands for them. A decade later, she rescued Ozzy from right after he'd been fired by Sabbath. She took him on as her first client, and their love affair kind of blossomed, started.
She's got to be a saint, though, to put up with him.
Yeah, they got married in 1982.
And they have, how many kids do they have, three?
They have three children.
Amy, Jack, and Kelly?
Yep.
Okay, Amy, Jack, and Kelly. Now, by the way, doesn't he have offspring from other relationships?
Ozzy has two older children from his first marriage, a daughter Jessica and a son Louis.
Okay.
And in fact, Jessica recently, within the month, had a daughter. So Ozzy's now a grandfather. Grandpa Ozzy.
Grandpa Ozzy. Okay. So now we're coming up to date here. He's got Sharon. He's got these three kids. And Sharon apparently is a real sharp businesswoman. She's got an eye for making money, even though it doesn't seem like they need to make any more money. And they're about to move in a new house, and it's been her idea, I read, I think in your book. She's the one that thought of this concept of bringing in television crews and filming them live, right? And didn't she go to Fox first, and they said no?
Yeah, exactly. She, you know, she'd been thinking for a few years and entertaining pitches from other people, and she was always amused by her family. And I guess what might have been really ahead of the whole reality genre or reality trend when she pitched it to Fox, and they weren't paying attention.
How long ago was that?
About 2 years ago.
2 years ago, okay.
Actually longer, about 3 years ago. And then that was turned down, and she kind of mulled the idea again when and then brought it up to MTV a few months later, and they were into it. You know, the MTV had been looking at the Osbournes, especially the kids, wondering how to get them on TV. They saw Ozzy's kids as kind of novelties before they even had an idea that there was a show there.
Novelty, what a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, you look at most of the VJs on MTV, they have a short half-life, and, they turn into novelties. Well, these kids, you know, Jack Osbourne was already, at age 16, a pretty well-known guy in L.A.'s music scene, you know, in the late-night club scene.
Right.
And he was involved with a big popular MTV band named Incubus, and so they had their antenna up and came across the Osbournes, and they all met at the right time.
All right, and so what transpired then? Well, how does this TV show work? Are there camera crews that live in the house and get up with these people and film them all day?
Yeah, it's really kind of interesting. They live in a big Mediterranean house in Beverly Hills, and when they moved into this house, they refurbished a number of rooms. At the same time, MTV was kind of outfitting the house as a kind of production, as a TV set, but a strange kind of TV set, because their production office occupies most of the garage and a downstairs guest bedroom. And they hid little security cameras throughout the house in all the main rooms. So they, from a central board, they could monitor all the activity throughout the house. And then they have three little camera crews, you know, two-person crews, one cameraman, one soundman. They kind of go where the action is. If Ozzy is doing something interesting in the kitchen or in one of the downstairs rooms, they send a crew there. If Jack or Kelly are going shopping or doing something in the city that's interesting, they send a crew with them. So they're just gathering tape all the time. Even when there's nothing going on at the house, there are crews there,
right,
waiting, usually watching TV, usually watching basketball games or some kind of sports on TV, hanging out with who's ever making food in the kitchen. But there's always somebody there. There's always, you know, an army of security and crew. And from all the times I've been there, it's really quite rare when something isn't going on.
Right.
Now, when they found out that she had cancer, did they think about canceling the show or giving him privacy? I mean, how did that whole thing transpire?
You're jumping right to the heavy stuff. You know, honestly, because I was there right around this time at the mm-hmm. house and watched it transpire, when she had cancer, when she found out she had cancer, they had no idea what was going on. The Osbournes didn't know, and MTV didn't know. In fact, MTV was in the earliest stages of production when Sharon was diagnosed. They had sent a camera crew to follow Ozzy out on the road in Ozfest, but they weren't getting any real usable material. Then they read in People magazine, in a story I wrote, that Sharon planned to continue the show, that she planned, not only planned to continue, that she planned to allow them to film her getting chemo and live with her while she was going through this. And, you know, they had no idea how it was going to work. Neither did the Osbournes.
So what happened? Did it affect anything?
Well, you know, the show went on, obviously, and the family settled down, and shooting commenced, and they began to get some pretty good footage, usable footage. I mean, this is a show that's really made in the editing room.
Right.
What looks linear on TV, might take place over the course of a week or two or three, and it's all out of joint out of order, but edited seamlessly.
Now, were any rooms off limits?
In the first season, Ozzy and Sharon's bedroom was off limits, and their bathroom. Ozzy was really adamant.
I don't blame him.
although, I mean, you know, then you see him naked sitting on a toilet in Vanity Fair. I mean, I don't know what the big deal is. And this season, there are less restrictions. But the difference is the camera people, the Osbournes themselves are really a little more outspoken when they don't want the cameras pointed at them. And they do have that prerogative. For instance, the other day, Jack told me that he hates waking up and opening his eyes and seeing a camera pointed in his face, you know, because they can sit at the master board and look into his room and see when he's stirring and send a crew there to greet him. And they used to do that last year. This year it's different. He's, you know, exercising a little bit more of his rights.
Do you talk to the family members on a regular basis?
You know, I just happen to have seen them on a regular basis. I spent New Year's with them. I was at their New Year's party when Ozzy and Sharon renewed their vows.
But that was fun.
Yeah, it was a blast. it was kind of an amazing New Year's party.
Now, is it true that she picks...
renewal of vows was a beautiful ceremony. I mean, Sharon looked gorgeous in this long white French dress that had white roses, and Ozzy was in a black Armani tux, and, you know, they exchanged traditional Jewish vows, and there was a little bit of humor when the rabbi offered each of them a glass of wine, and Ozzy asked if it was real wine to get a little bit excited. And then, you know, the party spilled out in these ballrooms. It was a big Las Vegas-themed style party with lots of gaming tables and a lounge act and some exotic dancers. And
how many people?
There were probably 500 of their closest friends, family, and you know, agents.
Yeah, agents. <whatever. laughs>
and you know, at a few minutes before midnight, the crowd gathered under the balloons, and the village people came on stage and performed.
No
and it was wild.
I bet that was some party.
it was just a really fun night. And so I talked to them then, and I saw them recently because we are working on another book that will be called The Osbourne Family Values, and is going to be a really in-depth look at their life, their life before the show, after the show, during the show, and, you know, and how they get along.
Now, before we go to the move forward, the reason that they picked New Year's and their, I guess, their original date, if I remember correctly, was the 4th of July, was because Ozzy has such a bad memory he can't remember dates?
Well, their anniversary, their wedding date is July 4th, and they picked that because Ozzy needed a date he could remember. you know, they had planned to renew their vows in October when Sharon turned 50, but she was sick and didn't have the strength to do it, so they put it off to New Year's.
Here's what I don't understand. It seems like Ozzy's worth a lot of money, which begs the question, why do what they're doing?
Unless they really enjoy it.
I mean, is it just out of pure enjoyment, or is it for the money, or what do you think?
You know, it's hard to turn down. I'm not in the position, but it must be hard to turn down $20 million for just living your life.
That's what they got. They're getting paid 20 mil?
That's what I read.
Wow.
20 million?
Now, would you do that, Alex, for 20 million?
Yeah, heck yeah.
Come on in.
In a heartbeat.
Exactly. They'd already had the cameras installed. You know, why not give it a go again? And Ozzy, you know, is the first to say they have some money, but not as much as everyone thinks, because after taxes and after paying expenses and salaries to crews, you know, they're left with a good living, but not as much as you read about.
Right.
And, you know, I think Sharon also sensed they hardly got paid anything their first season. I mean, they did it for nothing, practically nothing in terms of show business. When you think that a cast member for the show Friends gets about $1 million per episode.
Mm.
I think the Osbournes in their first season got $20,000 per episode.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think
so
I read
they took
that,
somewhat of a risk there.
Yeah, so they took a risk, and it took off. And I think Sharon, being a shrewd manager who'd been in the business, you know, for 30 years, 30-plus years, sees the moment to cash in.
Yeah.
And, you know, why not?
Well, she seems to be the sane one in the whole household.
She definitely rules the family. She's a really rock solid caretaker, and it's a family that needs a lot of taking care of.
Now, what about this? You had a box score for cussing. It seems like Ozzy uses four letter words very, very frequently. Is this something that he's done his whole life, or is it just for TV?
That's how he speaks in real life, you know, because I wondered that too. And I interviewed Ozzy several times during the 80s, and I went back and looked at my transcripts, and sure enough, you know, it was that F word, you know, used as nouns, verbs, adjectives, whenever he needed it.
Didn't he also do an interview on television recently? I don't know if it was a Diane Sawyer or some famous person, and he went the whole interview without saying one curse word, and she mentioned that to him, and he said, oh, F, you know, or something to that effect.
Yeah, I believe that was Diane Sawyer. But then, you know, he was on the American Music Awards recently, and they hosted it, and within the first minute or so, he had said it twice.
Yep.
So, you know, it's crazy.
Interestingly enough, Ozzy, I was reading his television preferences, and he likes the Discovery Channel, A&E, the Learning Channel,
the History Channel.
History Channel. So.
Yeah, he's really, you know, he really loves the History Channel and Discovery. He watches the, you know, nonstop. He, you know, he never went to school. He dropped out real early. I think he was 14 or 15 when he dropped out, and you know, is
he's trying to make up for it. Thirst for knowledge, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, what else is he going to do? I think spend he's already probably run through the cartoons. He's living the cartoons, so what does he need to watch that for?
Now, the kids, are the kids, are they well-behaved, or are they doing drugs, or what are they like? Do they do their chores?
You know, I think first and foremost, they're nice kids. They have a strong sense of family. They're devoted to each other. They love each other. You know, they also fight with each other. You know, and you get all sorts of love-hate, descriptions of love-hate relationships when you ask them about each other. But, you know, they are very devoted to each other. In a sense, they remind me of other showbiz families that I've met. But, you know, they don't have chores. They aren't a normal family. You know, I think, and that's part of the secret, part of what we like about this show, is they aren't normal, and yet they seem normal. You know, they're a nuclear family. They kind of eat together. They hang out together. They love each other. And then they just break off. I mean, you got, you know, nobody goes to school. Everybody's going out to clubs. They have weird friends.
Well, they're very,
you know,
weird friends.
Sharon, they get a talk. You know, if they go out at night, Ozzy says, you know, don't do drugs. And if you have sex, you know, wear a condom, use protection. I mean, this is just, it's kind of wacky.
Wow, they don't go to school.
No, you know.
Isn't there some law, though, in California?
Well, they're old enough that they don't have to.
Well, and they, you know, if they get their GED. But, yes, I mean, they're probably breaking the law. They're being raised by two parents who both dropped out of school at 15. They live a very bohemian, upper-class bohemian.
There you go.
Upper-class bohemian lifestyle.
Now, is the family being compensated, or are the kids, are each individual being paid as actors, if you will? Or
I think there's some division of payment here where everybody's getting something. You know, but I really can't answer that.
Right. The children, how's a nice way of putting this? Are they straight or gay?
They're all heterosexual.
That was my question, because the show that a couple nights ago I was watching, and I'm watching him rip the clothes off another guy, you know, and I'm saying, what in the hell's going on? I thought he was straight myself, and then I'm seeing this stuff, and they're stripping each other naked.
Well, I was with Jack recently, and he has a very pretty blonde girlfriend who he's very devoted to. There's no shortage of women, beautiful young girls in Jack's life.
That's awesome.
You know, which, you know, if I was 17, I wish I was living the, I'd live the life Jack Osborne has. It's really something. You know, and this, they have, you know, wild friends. They, you know, their friends, their peers are rock and rollers, are skateboarders, pro skateboarders. It's just, you know, it's not the run of the mill family where, you know, the teenagers are bringing home their friends and they're all sitting down to study for their PSATs or their SATs.
Now they're getting ready to go out to the bars again.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you keep saying, you said we. Who do you work for, Todd?
Oh, I am an editor with People Magazine.
You're an editor with People Magazine. So you're not working with MTV?
No.
Are you a freelance or a full-time? Or?
I am a full-time editor out of the Los Angeles Bureau of People Magazine.
And they basically have assigned you... basically be permanently with the Osbournes, or do you cover other things as well?
Oh, yes. I haven't covered the Osbournes for People other than the first story on Sharon Osbourne.
So okay.
Who do you cover? What's your job there?
You know, I cover whatever seems interesting and news breaking. I do a little bit of everything. This coming, we have the Golden Globes coming up, and I'll be part of that coverage. More recently, I interviewed Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Oh, she's gorgeous.
The past year, I wrote cover stories on Britney Spears and Matthew Perry and Tatum O'Neill.
I assume you meet all these people, right?
Oh, sure.
I guess you met so many, it's just not a big deal anymore.
You know, it's always a big deal. Not because of their celebrity, because of the opportunity to sit down with somebody and investigate their lives.
Mm-hmm. So is Britney Spears is pretty... up front and personal as she is, you see on these magazines or what?
She's a real cute girl. Yeah, she looks even prettier in person.
Wow, it's hard to believe.
And it's very nice.
How about television? Do you need television interviews? Are you on TV yourself?
Periodically, I'm on Access Hollywood. I was on Entertainment Tonight last week. But I'm frequently on Access Hollywood and some of the biography shows. I've written a number of books or co-written a number of books with celebrities.
Really?
And
like Drew Barrymore, was that one of them?
Drew Barrymore was one of my first. I worked with, years ago, a comedian named Louis Anderson
right.
on a couple books called Dear Dad and Goodbye Jumbo. I also worked with Anne Margaret and Burt Reynolds and Richard Pryor, among others.
It's quite a cast.
You know, it's there's not a boring one in the group.
So, what do you think now the future is for this Osborne television show? You think it's just a 2-year go, or you think it's going to be something longer than that?
Well, I think it will run its course on MTV over the next this season, and if they want to pursue another one, they'll probably do another short season.
Mm-hmm.
This fall, Sharon Osbourne is supposed to launch her own talk show, daytime talk show.
Really?
Or chat show, as she calls it.
On what channel?
It'll be syndicated. Right now, I think they're lining up stations. So, you know, as a syndicated program, it'll air across the country at different stations at different times, like Oprah or Dr. Phil. And she'll probably do pretty well. You know, when you talk to Sharon, I mean, Sharon is obviously one of the most, you know, the most interesting person on this show,
mm-hmm.
In that she is the rock that holds it all together. She makes the decisions, and she's the most articulate, and also she's going through something, you know, pretty serious. She's a fascinating conversationalist. She's outspoken. She's funny. She'll say anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as funny as Ozzy is, Sharon's really the profane one. And, you know, she might do well. She might hit because, you know, those daytime talk shows are successful because the hosts are interesting.
Now, is this going to be a Jerry Springer type, or is this going to be more of an Oprah-type show?
I think it'll be more Oprah-type. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not outrageous in a performer like Jerry Springer. She is somebody who would rather sit there and have a good conversation.
Mm-hmm. Are there any copycat shows on the horizon?
Well, there's going to be copycat shows until something hits. Most interesting are the shows that didn't make it off the drawing board, like Gene Simmons of Kiss reportedly had wanted to do a show. P. Diddy or Puff Daddy, whatever people know him as, had wanted to do a show. I think Courtney Love was talking about doing a show. There, obviously, is the Anna Nicole Smith show.
Oh, that is a dog of a show.
Yeah, it's a dog, but it's doing quite well for E! Just in the context of what rates well for them, that's doing pretty well. I think right now we're all looking for the next wave of reality.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the cover, you put Land of Oz. On the cover, that was
opening the door to the Land of Oz.
Land of Oz. Why do you say that?
Well, it's a magical place, and this, that whole house, and here is the book that is the companion to that first season, and you know what's fun about this book? I mean, there's some really great. I mean, if I do say so, some really entertaining pieces to this book that you can't get anywhere else. There is a very, very funny interview with Jason Dill, the professional skateboarder, who had kind of a co-starring role in a couple episodes last season, and makes a return this season. If he didn't make it this week, I think he makes it in episode number 6 and of this second season. And it's a funny, funny interview. There are also some lingering questions answered. There's a really good, funny interview with the Osborne's former security guard, Michael. If you wonder what happened to him, it answers all those questions. And there's, we learn more about the dog trainer, who is obviously the world's most beautiful dog trainer, and Ozzy's personal trainer.
Yeah.
Incidentally, Ozzy is up to running about 5 miles a day.
5 miles a day?
5 miles a day. He's, when I saw him last week.
Yeah, even I could do that then.
When I saw him last week, he'd just come back from a run, and he was so proud of hitting that 5 mile mark, and he lifted up his shirt and he goes, "Feel my gut." And, it was rock hard. I mean,
But when you see him on TV, you would think the guy is not smart enough to find his house.
Well, yeah. I mean, he does have some residual effects from the drug use and the alcohol.
Right.
He does suffer from Parkinsonian syndrome. He has the shakes and the stutter, and he's the first to admit that he's been damaged.
Yeah, and they all make his wife appear like she's a genius. And like you said, she is very articulate and comes across fantastic on TV.
Well, she's strong, and she in the world of rock and roll, she was a pioneer. She was one of the early women to work in that industry and put up with just a lot of insults and negative comments from powerful men she had to deal with, and it really toughened her.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said there's another book on the horizon, too?
Yes, really more of a family autobiography that we're almost finished with. And I think it's really entertaining, really revealing. There's a lot of a lot of information you learn that you didn't know about mm-hmm. the Osbournes. Also, just the relationships that make this family work. I find that really fascinating.
Now, the kids that you said they dropped out of school and all, I mean, how old were they when they dropped out? Do you know?
Well, Jack dropped out last year, as we saw on television. So he was, 16?
Mm-hmm.
Kelly's 17. Was 15 or 16 when she left. And Amy, I don't know about.
Amy.
Now, Amy, the oldest daughter, who we haven't seen.
And how old is she?
Amy is, 19 now?
19. And she intentionally decided not to be a part of this, right?
Absolutely.
Right, okay.
Does she still live at the house, or is she...
No, she moved out.
Gotcha. You have to, I guess, in that situation.
Yeah. Avoid all those cameras. She wanted nothing to do with them.
Now, did the kids drop out of school because they were, I hate to use the word, but lazy, or because they're being picked on because of their Oz relationship, or they just...
They had no interest. I just don't think education in the traditional sense plays a big role in their lives. I think they're all very showbiz directed.
Right. Gosh, the Osborne culture.
Again, the parents, aren't educated people in the traditional sense.
And they did very well.
I think, they probably have a few dollars socked away for each kid, so we should all be living like that.
Exactly.
Todd, excellent. We really enjoyed the book, and want to thank you for being on the book show.
Sure. It's a great show.
Your book, where can people find it?
The book is, in all the major stores. It's in all the Walmarts of the world. It's the Borders, Barnes & Noble. It's on MTV.com. It's on Amazon.com. Really, anywhere.
MTV, actually. I didn't realize that they had a bookstore on MTV.
If you go to MTV.com, you can order this book.
Fantastic.
And I think if anyone, for anyone who liked the first season of the series and the second season, this is really kind of a nice companion.
And what night is it on?
The show is on Sundays and Tuesdays, at least in my area it airs on those days.
Sundays and Tuesdays, okay.
I'm not sure where
but
it is.
But it's repeated throughout the week. So, you don't have to be tied down to any day. If you turn on MTV, you'll see it almost every day.
They're a progressive station. I mean, they've got Jackass, too. So
adding a lot to the world's culture.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. So. And when you get your next book out, please let us know.
Yeah. Okay, will do.
All right,
thank you.
Care.
Thanks so much.
All
Bye.
Right. That's Todd Gold, author of Officially Osborne on The Book Show. Okay, folks, we are going to do the top 10 best-selling books in America according to the USA Today. And we're going to start with number 10, the 10th best-selling book in America, The Return of the King by, guess who, J.R.R. Tolkien. And I'll tell you what, all the Tolkien books are selling like hotcakes because the second installment, the movie, The Twin Towers, is out right now.
And everyone says it's fantastic. I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it
yet. Everyone I talk to says it's so much better than the first, and I thought the first one was great.
Me too, and I'm not a fantasy fan at all, Jack, but I'll tell you, I really enjoyed the first one a lot, and yeah, I've read the same thing. The second one's even better. Number 9 in the country, according to the USA Today, The Pen with Curse by Catherine Coulter. Number 8, The Hours by Michael Cunningham. The 7th best-selling book in America, jumped all the way from 122nd, is Suzanne Summers' Fast and Easy. Recipes, plans, and information for a high-fat, low-carb diet. Can we say Atkins copycat?
Exactly. Give me a break.
Suzanne Summers, how could you? Well, I don't blame her. I mean, this is the time of year if you're a diet book.
I think it's time for us to write our own diet book, Alex.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, there are a lot of diet books. Well, you'll see Atkins is on this list, too. Number 6 in the country.
Now, Atkins is going to be one of our people we're going to be interviewing,
isn't
he?
We're going to be interviewing Robert Atkins on the book show in about 2 weeks.
Fantastic.
About 2 weeks, yeah. Number 6 in the country, Everything's Eventual by Stephen King. The 5th best-selling book in America, according to USA Today, The Lovely Bones by Alice Siebel. It's been up there.
That won't go away.
Yeah, for months and months and months, since the summer. The 4th bestseller, Truly Madly Manhattan by the prolific Nora Roberts. Number 3, The Summons by the prolific John Grisham. The 2nd best-selling book in America, Dr. Atkins' New Diet Revolution.
Are you serious?
Yeah, how to kickstart your metabolism to burn more calories. Aren't you on that diet?
I'm trying it. I want to make sure I do it before we interview him.
Okay.
I want to tell him the good, the bad, and ugly, and I'm also going to see if I can get back my cholesterol and triglyceride test because they tout that it actually will lower those as well, which I can't understand because you're eating nothing but fat.
Right.
Not fat, but meat and stuff like that. You would think it would cause your cholesterol to go through the roof.
Yeah, yeah.
We're about to find out.
Mm-hmm.
Firsthand.
I'm looking forward to it. And the number 1 best-selling book in America, according to the USA Today, is Crossroads of Twilight by Robert Jordan. This was ranked 168th. Last week, and now it is number 1.
Yeah, I was about to say, I haven't heard of that one before.
I haven't either. Robert Jordan. Maybe he's an up-and-comer, or maybe we just don't read enough fiction, Jack. I don't know. All right.
It's impossible. With all the books we have to go through, Alex, it's impossible to stay on top of them all.
I know. You're right. I just read a figure between books that are published by major and minor publishers and then books that are self-published. over 160,000 books are published every year or something.
That is amazing.
It is.
Look how many trees they're chopping down.
I know. Well,
let's get back to those e-books again.
That's right. E-books, that's the future. That's it. That's the top 10.